Hey, Jay.
Hey there, Larry.
I'm groaning into my drink.
Oh, my God. I'm just groaning into my soul.
Oh, really? What happened this week?
Oh, God. It just was...
What didn't happen?
Well, there were a bunch of things that were supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Mostly involving various controlling devices of things, earthquake machines.
Oh, God, the earthquake machines.
Teleporters.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh.
Death rays of every kind and stripe. But none of them worked.
Yeah.
And none of them worked. We had a lot of... Our engineering and IT departments did not have very good weeks.
I bet they came to an... Their contracts, quote-unquote, came to an end.
Oh, a lot of contracts came to an end.
Quote-unquote.
Quote-unquote.
Yeah.
It was a quote-unquote bloodbath where a lot of quote-unquote heads rolled.
Literally.
And then, yes. So I had a lot of paperwork to deal with as well, and a lot of new hires.
Oh,
we got a lot
good.
Of new faces.
Oh, that's good.
Which, yeah.
A lot of cheerful
nice.
New people.
Yeah, that's always nice.
I like to get to know new people.
Yeah.
I always like to get to... Well, that's... Yeah. So you had a lot of technical problems.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what? Which makes me think, you know what we should talk about this week?
What should we talk about?
Technobabble.
Technobabble. My favorite kind of babble.
It is, because at least it sounds like it's doing something.
It really does.
Where babble's just babble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, technobabble's great. And it's funny, because I started this week with a vague rewatch of Deep Space Nine. I'm not doing it, like, super officially. I just was, like, was available. I was like, let me dip back into this. And Deep Space Nine is full of some fun sort of... I feel like when it comes to television science fiction, Star Trek is obviously the gold standard for techno babble.
If we want to have a gold standard for techno babble, yes. Yes.
And of course we do.
Right. Well, I mean, well, but let's, you know... I would like to think everyone who's listening has an idea what technobabble is. But
we
should define our terms. I would define technobabble as pseudoscience wrapped up or using pseudoscience to explain either a plot point or a machine or device in order to save our heroes from certain doom.
Right.
And it makes and if you were to look at the words, it actually doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But in the context of the show, it means something.
Right.
But it is actually technological babble.
Right.
Thus, technobabble.
It's the in-world way of explaining things that happen and providing plot points. And, it's, you know, Geordi saying, you know, the plasma manifolds are buckling.
Are buckling. Captain. We have to... rotate the shield array.
Exactly.
To...
We have to modulate the frequency 38%.
Yeah. In order to...
To match their wave function.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 blah.
We're gonna send a tachyon spray.
Oh, yeah.
via our subspace emitters to disperse the anomaly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all techno.
That was fine. The sad thing is, like, I've watched enough Star Trek, I'm like, I know exactly what he's talking about.
I think I remember that episode.
But it's all shit, really.
it's such shit. I mean, it was... A couple of years ago, I had the very very depressing moment of realizing the depths of that. Because, you know, the thing that I've always loved about Star Trek and the, like, part of Star Trek's, you know, reputation in the world is that it's super, super science-y.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that
the science
that
is good.
They're using science to solve problems.
They're using science, but also, like, the show, the science is researched, and it's all great. And, like, because, you know, a thing that does not have the same kind of technobabble, uses a little bit, which would be Star Wars.
Yeah, Star Wars doesn't really
use a lot of it.
It uses, like, vibes, like, hey, I got the Force.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest problem with the prequels is that there's a lot more technobabble.
Ugh, yeah.
And midichlorians and fucking midichlorians. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah, applying a scientific reason for something mystical.
Exactly.
I think that was the problem with that.
Which is also my problem with the Crystal Skull, but that's neither here nor there.
We can talk about Crystal Skull.
But, like, the thing about Star Trek is that, you know, Star Trek was based in hard science and real science. And
that's the reputation.
Reputation.
But it's not real.
They use the sounds of actual satellites make for the, like, the sounds on the original Enterprise bridge. It was like, yeah! And then I realized it's such bullshit.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's not true.
I discovered... It suddenly dawned on me that they're on ships traveling at the speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
No one's experiencing relativistic effects.
Yeah.
They're communicating with both planets and other ships instantaneously.
Yes, yes.
And I was like, wait, how does that? And then I realized that's what subspace is.
Yeah, subspace, which is below space.
Or within or space.
Something,
or,
you know, is the hand-wavy way totally so hand-wavy. That they can get information
yeah.
across. Vast distances. And they're not even traveling at the speed of light. They're traveling at vastly faster
what?
Than the speed of light.
I mean, warp 10 is like, is it 10 times the speed of light? Or is well, it, no, it's got to be.
It's like cube. That's it's, what yeah, I thought. It's, gotta like, be like, it's like squared or cubed yeah. or something like that. That's what I've understood, like, when I was reading the Star Trek role-playing game in the 80s.
Yes.
Nerd! like, that's how, in that particular licensed yeah. product, that's what they explained it as. Like, you know, because it wasn't like warp 2, where, like warp 4 wasn't twice the speed of warp 2.
Right.
It was like a cubed or squared right. or something like
exponentially
that.
Exponentially more.
Yeah, they it was exponentially. That sounds so much smarter and covers a whole much more sins than I was saying. Yeah, it was exponentially. Right. And so they're exponentially traveling faster than the speed of light.
And yeah, and again, still having, again, real-time conversations.
Yeah.
And also not aging faster than the people, like...
Well, the people at home would age. Would,
yeah, the people at yeah. home are not... Yeah, people at home, like, there's no time slippage at all. Mm-hmm. And that's yeah.
And they can, you know, twist it around, like, oh, subspace is blah, blah, blah.
And that's
blah,
what they always
do. Yeah, and that's They're what they always like, do.
Subspace.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah. There we go. Because we got to tell a story.
Yeah. And, you know,
and
that's
I get
fine.
That. That's fine. But, like...
Yeah.
You know, but it's... I, and see, for me, it's not necessarily the problem isn't, like, I'm more old school Trek. Like, I would, if I'm going to rewatch it, it's going to be the original.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a little less technobabble in the original series.
Yeah.
Like, they still had their, you know, we have the dilithium crystals
right.
and blah, 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 blah. But, like, I think it takes a huge jump in Next Generation.
Right. But I feel like that's...
You know, and I think it becomes, I think technobabble becomes a... Life, a creature that is living on its own.
Yeah,
it ascends to truly wonderful places in Star Trek Voyager.
Oh yeah,
I think so. You know, so to me, modern Star Trek, the sin of technobabble is quite high.
Right.
You know that it's like this is actually nonsense. Like, why don't we just say we're raising the shields? Like, but
right.
like, you can only raise the shields so many times, and it becomes boring.
Exactly. And it becomes a thing that no one just wants to say. But also, I feel like there is a larger cultural thing at work there, because you know you watch the original series of Star Trek,
yeah.
and they're still talking about transistors. Like
yeah.
that was
yeah.
cutting edge technology yeah, yeah. at the time.
And they have buttons on their panel.
Yeah, they're a step away from freaking vacuum tubes
yeah, yeah.
operating the Enterprise.
Well, most people didn't have color TVs.
Exactly.
So, like, he's wearing gold.
So, you know, I mean, that show, and I see what you're saying about the sin. I'm actually still a big fan of Voyager.
Yeah.
For various reasons. I really liked it.
Is it 7 of 9? Is that the reason why you like it?
Honestly, 7 of 9 is my least favorite part.
Oh, Leanne.
Yeah.
Jennifer Leanne.
No, she's, okay. 7 of 9 is my second least favorite part.
so you're a Neelix fan.
I am a Neelix fan. Neelix is my favorite part. How could Neelix not be your favorite part?
Because I only like the guy on Benson.
What?
Yeah, he was on Benson.
I know he was on Benson, but that's why I like him, because he was on Benson.
No.
It's anyway. Like,
actually, you know what I just realized? And I don't know why, I'm just literally just realizing it, that Star Trek has used two Benson...
That's right.
...cast members in there.
Well, you know, it was the 80s, the people, you know.
I like
that. That's how it works. Benson was great.
I'm an Odo fan.
And who's not an Odo fan? But anyway,
yeah.
what I was going to say is that, like, one of the things, as much as we all love the Starship Enterprise, the original Starship Enterprise,
uh-huh.
and the Enterprise from the movies, the ship was not as much of a character in the original series or the first few movies. In the way that it became in Next Generation, where it's, like... I feel like you're right that there was less technobabble just because
yeah.
there were less plots that revolve around the ship malfunctioning or less things that were solved by, like,
yeah.
fixing the ship.
Well, I wonder...
But I feel
I don't
like
know, I, yeah, but I don't know if it's, like... I'm trying to go, is it a character? I mean, like...
Yeah. In Next Generation, the ship really is a character. I mean, not just, you know, the computer voice or whatever, but, like, in the way that it moves and in the way that, like, it is... Exactly the things you're pointing out is that, like, the technology of the ship is often the solution to a problem.
Well, I wonder... Well, right, but I'm I'm just thinking about things. Oh, it's breaking down. Like, how many holodeck? Like, how many holodeck problems can you have? And like, oh, maybe we shouldn't use the holodeck.
Well, but, like, there's no reason. There are many, many reasons why you should not use the holodeck. Why the holodeck is really, really poorly programmed and designed.
Yeah.
Because any space on your ship where you can create your coworkers and make them do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Is pretty much rife for abuse. I'm always like, I can't believe that no one thought there should be some sort of blockage here.
I think we should write a book about, like, what the abuses that happened on the Enterprise D from Riker.
Oh my god! Yeah,
the holodeck. But what I was going to say was, like, just kind of a stepping back from in story problems. I wonder if, like, one of the reasons, like, oh, why we had breakdowns of the Enterprise, which makes me go, Geordi, are you doing your job? But is because there was the kind of the dictate of, like, there won't be interpersonal conflicts.
Right.
Which there were in the original series, but, I mean, not, like, how we would understand dramatic interpersonal conflicts, like, on, you know, a modern-day drama, be it sci-fi or what.
Yeah.
There's still kind of conflicts between the characters in the original series. They were all still working together, and they weren't trying to stab each other in the back, Game of Thrones, but...
Right. But, you know, Spock and McCoy did not like each other.
Yeah. Or did they?
They really did not. On the original series, it was really clear that, like, these guys do not like each other at all.
Yeah, probably. But I know with Next Generation, there's the dictate of, like, there won't be interpersonal conflicts, though, you know. So I wondered, like, okay, well, now we just had the Enterprise break down a lot.
I mean, I feel like that goes for, like, the first couple of seasons. But then after that, but I feel like it's also just a larger sort of cultural thing in that all of our lives, even by 1987, had become technologically more complicated.
So we needed a more technological answers to problems.
And we were savvier about it. And like, culturally, you know, futurism had kind of caught up and, like... So that's, you know, that jump in technology and that jump in our awareness of those technological problems and the, like, I feel like that's, and that's also why it grew more and more as the shows went on.
Do you, I'm going to, because often Star Wars is not called science fiction, it's science fantasy.
Science fantasy or space opera.
Now, given Star Trek's lack of actual science, like, it uses science as a leaping off point, but, like, with the technobabble, is it science fiction or is it space opera?
Star Trek is definitely science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars is definitely space opera.
Right.
I mean, I love Force Awakens deeply.
Yeah.
I saw it 8 times. It was the best.
Almost as many times as you saw Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, almost. Though over longer time. I mean, whatever. No, I haven't seen Revenge of the Sith that many times. Anyway, that's not the point. But as much as I loved it...
You were the best of us! Sorry.
The hyperspace laser weapon.
Right.
In terms of hand-wavy...
Yeah.
Laser beams that that fly across multiple star systems...
Yeah.
...instantaneously and create explosions in space that you can easily see multiple star systems away during the day...
I wonder, it's similar to that moment in the Star Trek reboot.
Yeah, it's a J.J. Abrams thing.
Where Spock is on that planet, and he sees Vulcan.
And he sees Vulcan, and Vulcan is, like, the size, is larger than the moon is in our sky.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you're that close to that kind of cataclysm, the planet you're on is destroyed. Like, that's how physics works.
Because he's near Scotty, so he could have at least called them and said, hey, get off the...
Exactly, yeah.
So, set my DVR to record.
So, yeah, I mean, J.J. Abrams, and I do love him. I love all of his work. I really do. I'm actually a big fan.
Yeah.
Except for Into Darkness, but
that's a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other podcast, solely on that. But, yeah, that he does not clearly care for science in that way.
In that way, because, I mean, like, That same Star Trek movie had the big red ball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, let's red extract matter. Red matter. Let's extract the red matter.
Talking hand wavy.
Yeah, yeah. We need a way to justify a planet collapse. Like, because if that matter had the ability to have a planet collapse onto itself, wouldn't the ship it's on do this? And the, but it was a much bigger ball.
But it was in a containing.
Right, but like the physics, like right.
You've already gone too far.
I used the word physics.
Once you say, but the physics, like nope, nope.
Yeah,
I said containment field. Were those? That's the end of those questions.
Right. Yeah, I want to bring up one of my favorite shows that also deals with technology as solution, which is of course Doctor Who.
Oh yeah,
and has one of the greatest moments of technobabble.
Yeah,
in the history of technobabble.
Oh, which one?
The third Doctor would say. Not often, but occasionally, he would say, reverse the polarity of the neutron flow. That's my favorite technobabble of all time.
That is now the title of my first album with my band, Viva La Pluto. Our first reverse album, Reverse the Polarity of the Neutron Flow, with our hit single, The Neutron Flow. And the follow-up, Reverse the Polarity.
Which is just the song played backwards. And it's just like, and, you know, and like, I think, like, and Doctor Who has, like, Akron energy, which I think has something to do with time energy. Like, it's just like, what? But they might as well just be going blah, 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 blah.
But I feel like...
But there's a quality of, and in Star Trek, too, when they start using technobabble, if there's a certain ring to it, there's a certain authority to it that you're like, oh, I believe these people know what they're talking about, even if I don't know.
Exactly. They have to, like, that's part of the whole point of using technobabble is, like, in a sort of story world-building way, it lets me know that you know what's going on in this world.
Yeah.
Let's, like, that's, and sort of lays out the rules and the understanding that, like, with Star Trek, you know, we know the plasma manifolds are not supposed to overload.
I'm not even exactly sure what a plasma manifold does.
No, it does it, something.
Does it distribute the heat of a plasma? Like, what does it do?
I think it focuses the plasma energy that's running through the ship's conduit. I don't fucking know. No one knows.
Well, I hope Geordi knows.
I'm not entirely sure.
He keeps spitting on you. I'm drunk. Drunk on power.
But the thing that I found interesting about Doctor Who, and I'm not a big Doctor Who person.
You need to start at the beginning.
I don't have 50 years. I really don't. I do not have 50 years to spend getting caught up.
It's okay because not all the episodes exist. You can skip those.
But I feel like from what you're saying and from what I've heard and the Doctor Who that I've watched, I feel like there was maybe a time when they were more diligent about their technobabble. And certainly in like the sort of the reboot from the Ninth Doctor on...
Yeah.
They're pretty open on this. Is just, I think he literally often says, "I'm just hand." I mean, this is
timey-wimey.
We're just waving. I'm just waving this magic stick.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I think the technobabble in the original run of Doctor Who, like, it was kind of consistent across its universe.
Yeah,
and you know how they had their version of transporter and things like that, you know, that, like, the same word was used regardless of which civilization might have something like it. Or, you know, so they kind of were consistent in the methodology of it. What's interesting about the Doctor is that sometimes he wasn't always, like, using, you know, he could pull a switch or, you know, whatever and blow up the pirate robot, you know.
Right.
The robot pirate with the parrot. but then the episode I'm thinking of...
Did he blow up the robot pirate with the parrot, or did the robot pirate that he blew up have a parrot?
He had a robot parrot.
Oh, that's
he was a half man, half machine...
Cyborg. Cyborg. He's a cyborg.
Okay, if you want to use your technobabble...
That's a legitimate term.
Is it Cy or Kyborg?
Really? Really?
Okay, so cyborg.
Yeah.
Like the $6 million man.
Yes.
He's a cyborg. The cyborg. And they were... he was a pirate, and there's more to it, because there was like this... He had a nurse, but the nurse was really in charge, but she was a mental projection of this old lady. But they were going around the universe kind of like collapsing planets and taking out the minerals.
Oh.
So like literally, like this one scene where he's walking down the hallway of the pirate ship, the Doctor, and he sees all these like rocks about the size of softballs, but he realizes they're planets.
Whoa.
And they still have a good chunk of their mass. So they're all delicately balanced in their gravitational field, so it doesn't, wow, like, collapse the ship.
That's actually very cool.
It's very cool. It was an that episode. Is a really cool it was moment. Written. It was an episode written by Douglas Adams.
See, that's Douglas Adams. He knew what was up.
That's true. Maybe that's a good. You've read Hitchhikers, I'm assuming.
Yes.
You're a human being, so you've read Hitchhikers.
I have a soul. I'm not a monster.
But what I like about Hitchhikers, like, it both embraces technobabble,
yeah,
and I think it. I wonder when, you know, I'm assuming technobabble as a term came around much later than even Hitchhikers, but
yeah,
but like it kind of embraces it, but also uses it. I mean, like a computer, you know, that's using an infinite amount.
Yeah,
you know, it's like he uses. I think he uses his technobabble in a great way of like opening up story,
right?
You know, and possibilities, and I actually don't think the science is too insane. Like,
no.
Like, it's not, I feel like in Hitchhikers, the science, why edgy,
right,
as in on the far reaches of science, isn't so, it actually makes sense, where,
yeah,
like, the plasma manifolds are collapsing.
It doesn't
we have
make
to
any
rotate
sense.
The frequency of the shield. We have to modulate the shield frequency 38%. Yeah. What is that 38% frequency?
What? Yeah. No. Star Trek is definitely just chunks of words thrown out.
It's word salad.
Semi-randomly.
Word salad. But I definitely think like I think books have a better track record of kind of using real science or edge science on the edge. Because they have more space,
right?
Space to describe that and make it make sense,
right?
You know, I mean, I'm thinking like Stephen Baxter, who writes very hard science fiction, but it's really big ideas,
yeah,
like, you know, like a ship that's traveling at almost the speed of light. Because as far as our understanding is, you cannot travel faster,
right?
You know, how would that work? Or
right,
a massive construction,
or you know,
I think one time I was telling you about like. What would it be like to be on a planet that's shaped like a cube?
Yeah.
Like, what would it be like?
Yeah.
Like,
he
actually kind of goes into that.
How would
and,
that
you know,
work? Or, you know, or like Haldeman's The Forever War,
mm-hmm,
really
mm-hmm,
dealing with like. And,
oh, my God.
I'm beautifully using like the relativistic effects
yeah,
to describe what it's like to be a soldier who goes to war
and
then comes
back
home to a completely changed planet.
Oh, my God. It's such a brilliant.
Such a brilliant, beautiful book.
It's one of my favorite books ever because it's one of the great science fiction books, and I think it's one of the great science fiction books because it's using a scientific aspect to tell a story metaphorically.
Right.
So it's crossing over. It's not just
yeah,
hey, we're in outer space. Let's tell an outer space story. It's using actual science in a great, powerful way to tell what it's like to be a soldier returning home.
Yeah.
Again and again and again and. The world around you is changing,
and it gets gets to be the only people you know and understand are the people you were at
war with. It's
yeah,
it's a book that
it's so great
that they've talked about forever making, and I kind of get nervous every time because it's like I'd rather have a mini series because it's such a great
book.
But of course they would probably just make a trilogy. Anyway.
But before we move on to like other stuff,
I
do want to talk about you know comic books.
Mm.
In particular, I feel like there's less hand-wavy stuff in DC Comics.
Okay.
That, like, DC Comics, I mean, there's, whatever.
Well,
there's a little bit of science-y stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. I feel like DC Comics lives in a different place than, like, Marvel. Because that was also part of Marvel's thing when it started in the 60s was trying to be more real.
Right.
And so...
Grounded characters.
More grounded characters, but also more grounded in real. And, like, I feel like... The Marvel movies have dropped most of it, where it's like, you know, Tony Stark, they're not laser beams that shoot out of his hands, they're repulsor rays that is somehow different than laser beams.
Right.
You know,
laser beams disintegrate, repulsor beams repulse.
Obviously.
Duh.
Hello. and, you know, the thing about, like, Reed Richards inventing unstable molecules.
So he can wear clothes.
But then that becoming, like... He becomes basically the costumer for, as we mentioned before, for everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone is wearing Reed Richards original.
Maybe that's why the Fantastic Four is so wealthy, is because, like, he's, you know, selling unstable molecule clothes.
Apparently he is, or, you know.
I don't...
I feel like DC doesn't spend as much time in that, like, let's try to explain this space, and they're just sort of like, this is how it happens.
Yeah,
Nth metal, and we're done.
Yeah, there's the nth metal, which may or may not be from Thanagar or ancient Egypt or right. both. Well, but there's kind of like, yeah, I guess they don't kind of explain stuff. But I think about the technology, like the Green Lantern ring.
Yeah, but they don't explain it.
They just say it's emotion.
Yeah.
And that's true. They don't explain it. Because I was like, well, what about the fourth world stuff? The crazy Jack Kirby fourth world, dark side, and
Metron.
They don't really explain it. It's like,
this is the
mother box. It will ping and tell you answers and open up a boom tube. And
yep, and that's
how we get there.
And we're not going to like dig into the details. And Marvel definitely digs into the details.
True, there was, but I want to push back on with the Flash though a little bit because the Flash they used to in the original, well, not the original, the second volume, the Barry Allen years.
Yeah,
the original Barry Allen years. They used to do Flash facts.
Oh,
so it would be like, oh, how can the Flash do this? And it's like, well, he can vibrate his body and da 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 da, and like, oh, he can make glass by rubbing his hand on sand, you know, and his frequency violates blah blah blah, you know, but I agree. There wasn't a lot of like, you know, there wasn't like PIM particles and
right, yeah,
and
Marvel's full of that, yeah, PIM particles.
I mean, there's the white dwarf matter with Ray Palmer, but they don't actually kind of explain.
Yeah.
I don't think he's like he shrinks because he's got white dwarf matter.
Oh man! Yeah. And like all the technological stuff that's in the Marvel universe, like Cerebro.
Yeah.
Like there's all these devices that they all have.
Yeah.
Iron Man's armor, the Fantasticar.
Yeah.
Kirby.
Yeah. Pogo.
The Pogo stick.
Pogo stick.
I mean, it's just like Spider-Man's web shooters. Like there's
which I still like. Brief aside, I still think it makes much more sense that he has organic shooters than a 16-year-old somehow invents.
But that's the whole point, is he's super smart. He's
also
a
poor.
Genius.
How can he afford... Are you telling me like he can take apart like a TV set and make web shooters?
That's exactly what he did.
That's a bridge too far, my friend.
No.
Bridge too far.
He's that smart.
All right.
He's that smart and quippy.
All right.
He's technologically gifted in that way. Come on.
Okay, fine.
So comic books live there. Before we get to fantasy, I want to take a moment to call out our today's sponsor.
What?
Rossum's Universal Robots. When you have a dirty job that you need done, they're the ones you call. They'll send some people to take care of it, and they take care of all of your problems.
Nice.
Yeah. Apparently they've got a little outpost happening in New York right now. My buddy Mac Rogers is involved with.
Are you sure about that?
Am I sure about what?
That post. I was making an illusion.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's
nice.
Yeah, I like that. Well done.
There you are.
Yeah. So, but moving on.
Yeah.
Because it's not exactly a stretch to talk about fantasy in terms of technobabble.
Right.
Since fantasy does not have much in the way of technology.
No. But it has lots of...
boy, do they have techno babble. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
The thing that kept me from this here... I'm sorry, everyone, you're going to try to take away my nerd card. But I do not like, enjoy, or ever care to do again any reading of actual Lord of the Rings books.
But the fake ones you're okay with?
I'll watch the movies.
Oh, okay.
Extended
or not?
I'll watch the extended, but I'll always stop them once we get to the hobbits frolicking on the bed. Because for me, the story is over. I'm done now. I'm satiated.
Isn't the frolicking on the bed... Oh, wait, okay. I was thinking like the first time they were in Rivendell.
Nope.
It's
the second time in Rivendell. And like, okay, we're good. We're here. Yeah. Story's wrapped up, guys.
But you have to admit, that's like kind of like the beginning of a porno.
It is. Hobbits frolicking on the bed.
They're like 5 minutes away from everyone getting naked.
Exactly. We need is Sam go to them, just turn to Mary and like, you look really tense. You need a back rub? Oh, boy. And then it all takes a turn. But
I've come to see if you're feeling better.
Yeah. But yeah, no, because of the techno babble. I can't... And this is ironic because I own a book of Westerosi history.
Uh-huh.
But I can't. I have a lot of trouble wading through the made-up history. To quote Bender, I don't want to have to memorize a whole bunch of new kings and shit
in the Westerosi.
But amazingly, you can quiz me on like the Targaryen reign,
so
and I'm
don't
down.
Think it's irony. I don't think it's irony. I think it's hypocrisy.
Oh, okay. I'm okay with that. Well, here's what I'll say. Here's what I'll say about that. And it's a thing. Harry Potter is another thing that lives in this spot.
Oh yeah.
Because Harry Potter is definitely full of lots of hand wavy.
Yeah.
This logic of this magic falls apart the second you think about it for like a minute.
Yeah.
You're like, this doesn't, wait, what? But when I always struggled reading the Lord of the Rings books when I was a kid. I love The Hobbit.
Uh-huh.
But couldn't get through the full thing.
Yeah.
And part of it is that when it comes to that history, it's like the story stops.
Yeah.
The entire story stops
for
them to sing a song about the kings of old.
God.
And I gotta read a fucking song.
Tom Bombadil.
Fucking Tom Bombadil. We gotta sit in fucking Tom Bombadil's house.
I'm so glad
for like
he was cut
50
from that
pages.
Movie.
And I'm like, and everything just stops. Yeah. And like, I can't do that.
But I don't think that's I don't think that's the same thing as like, we have to listen to how this magic sword works.
Right. No, it's not.
Like, I think it's irritating, and I think it's dumb to talk about a mountain that they're walking past. Let me tell you about this mountain, kids.
But
we're not going to go near it.
I put that under, for what fantasy has, because again, it's magic, so it's just like, it's magic. There's no...
But I think with like Harry Potter, and I think even with Game of Thrones,
Song of Ice and Fire. Since we're talking about the books more than the movie,
show. Eddard gets his head cut off. Spoilers.
Jesus.
But I think how magic, they explain how magic works in both Harry Potter and Game of Thrones. I feel like it's a similar thing of like, you know, I think magic and technobabble are devices in order to tell a story.
Right.
You know, that like, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, Gandalf coming back.
Yeah.
He's Gandalf the White.
Right. It's like, and explaining the whole, like...
Yeah, explaining, like...
I smashed his wreck upon the thing and...
Yeah, it's like...
Went to a place beyond space and time. But I feel like...
What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
You
know? But to me, that's that history stuff. And even in A Song of Ice and Fire, it lives in that same place, is exactly what you're saying. Is like, we're filling in sort of gaps in this and telling you things that you're going to need to know. Like, you really, to a certain degree, or at least, I don't know, the impression is that you need to know about all of these kings to understand why it's important when Aragorn takes the throne.
Right.
You need all of that background information.
Do you think...
Or
like,
at least you're supposed to need it.
You're supposed to care. You don't.
I really don't.
He's a handsome white guy. Of course he's going to be king.
You see that guy?
He's the tallest of the group.
Yeah.
He's got blonde hair. He's all kind of emo.
Oh, man.
He's got the 5 o'clock shadow.
His cheekbones. Yeah. You can cut glass on those.
Yeah, of course he's going to end up with the elf.
Oh, yeah.
But no, what I was thinking, like, well, what about, like, in, you know, are we ever going to hear, like, why does Obsidian... I bet you we're going to hear, like, why Obsidian kills the White Walkers.
Oh, yeah, no, they will, like,
you
know, that will... That
which
is,
to me is, like, akin to technobabble.
That is,
it's like, it's a sharp, pointy thing made of fire.
What we're going to get. We'll get some, like... Dragon glass is made by dragons, and the fire kills the cold within them, or whatever.
Yeah.
There's going to be, there's definitely, and
versus it just being sharp and pointy,
right?
Like, it's going to kill them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a special kind of sharp
like
and pointy.
With fantasy, you get into that sort of poetry end of the technobabble, where it's like, we're going to give you this reasoning behind it.
Yeah. I think I might be coming around. I think in the sense that technobabble in fantasy might actually carry more meaning than the technobabble in science fiction.
At least television science fiction.
Yeah. Well, because I do kind of want to circle back. It's like, well, is Doctor Who... Like, did you watch... what's the name of the show?
Which one?
It's based on the books. Caliban's War...
The Expanse?
The Expanse. Did you watch The Expanse?
I did not watch The Expanse.
It's fascinating because they're really trying to make an effort, and I've read the first book, and it's good. It's really good.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make an effort to be as scientifically plausible as possible, like how the mechanics of travel through interplanetary space certainly would work.
Right.
You know, and gravity would work differently on, like, after a while you would be taller and you wouldn't be able to go back on Earth because you're...
Yeah.
Now used to so-and-so. So they're trying to make an effort. You know, there's certain leaps of... I don't want to spoil anything, but... Of stuff that happens because of...
Yeah.
Stuff.
Because of storytelling.
Because of storytelling. Well, no, I mean, because of a plot point I don't want to get into.
Got it.
But I would definitely call that science fiction, because they're really using science to tell a story. Where, like, Star Trek, are they using science to tell a story? Are they kind of using science as a way into telling a different kind of story?
Hmm.
So, like, is it really science fiction? And, like, are Star Trek and The Expanse... I mean, yes, we can say they're broadly in science fiction.
Right.
But is more, like, one more science fantasy, like... is Star Wars is Star Trek closer to Star Wars?
Then...
With, like, 2001... And The Expanse.
Right.
Chris's gravity science fiction? Maybe. Yeah, I would call it science. Gravity science fiction.
Oh, yeah.
Like those. Well, it is, because it's using science to tell a story.
Well, I guess
that would be that would be impossible to tell without.
Right. But I
But Chris, in like 10 years, gravity could also be historical, like Apollo 13.
Exactly. I mean, people will think that it's historical, like Apollo 13, which is sad. But
they make it back home. Spoiler.
I think a difference between you and I is I don't use the definition you're using for science fiction.
Yeah.
Like, to me, a science fiction is not separable into the two terms, like fiction using science.
Yeah. It is
one term that is more blankety than that.
Right.
That is that, you know, under that, like, yes.
So you have the science fiction and then the science fantasy, space opera.
Really there's like hard science fiction.
Right.
And then, like, to me, anything that is in that realm, to me, Star Trek lives more in a science fiction place.
Uh-huh.
Because even though the science fiction is kind of hand wavy, it is like part of the whole thing.
Right.
And it is to some degree.
Computers, spaceships.
And to some degree based in like actual physics understanding of the universe.
Yeah, yeah. With bending some of it in order to tell a story week to week. Yeah.
In order to facilitate storytelling and the things you need. Because, I would love to see a version of Star Trek where they're traveling at relativistic speeds but experiencing relativistic effects, where it would almost be like sea travel in the 1800s.
You would spend like three seasons on the Enterprise before you got to a planet.
but that'd be interesting. Or even if you can get to the planet, but it, like, you know what I mean? Where it's like those messages aren't, they can't call up Starfleet and say, hey, Starfleet, how's it going? Starfleet goes, oh, it's all right. It's raining here today.
Yeah.
It's got to be more like, here's a message from Starfleet that is arriving to you.
Yeah.
And now you've got to deal with the thing and not know
what's
really happening.
What you're asking for is Lost in Space.
Yeah.
The greatest of science fiction shows.
Oh, that's a good one.
But
so for me, that's the thing, is that, like, something that is going to say, I'm going to adhere rigidly to the rules of physics as we understand is hard science fiction to me.
Yeah.
Whereas everything else, and then you get
still
to
science fiction.
You get to something like Star Wars, where, I mean, there is literally magic in Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's when, to me, you're in like science fantasy space opera area.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you're leaving any real...
You're just kind of using... You're telling a romp using aliens and strange locations on a bigger
scale. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like that, to me, those are the three gradations, and, you know, everything sort of slots in...
Somewhere in
those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, like, something that sort of straddles it is like Guardians of the Galaxy... is science fantasy-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, because it kind of... Well, which I kind of think that's what a lot of comic books are.
Yeah.
It follows in the, you know, we're going to have a hand-wavy, unstable molecule t-shirt.
Right, exactly.
Wouldn't your unstable molecule t-shirt just fall off of you?
Like, apparently not. Reed Richards is a goddamn
genius. It's somewhat
stable. It's stable enough.
Shouldn't it be called stable-ish? Stable-ish
exactly.
Molecule t-shirt?
And it's like it lives in that place where, you know... Like, to me, once you get into, like, actual magic comic books live in, especially Marvel comics live in that place where, you know, telekinesis is explainable somehow.
It's a mutant power.
But it's still rooted in, like, some sort of science-y kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what sort of spares it. But, yeah, it's like...
But, I think... Going back to magic, we're kind of running up to it, or like certainly like pseudoscientific or like supernatural powers, like ESP and stuff like that. Like, I do find those fascinating because like they're not necessarily rule free, but they kind of are rule free.
They're totally rule free.
Like, you can make them up.
Yeah.
you know, and as long as you're kind of consistent, but even you don't have to be consistent, because then you can kind of figure out some other thing to kind of hand wave.
Yeah.
Like, you know, death isn't, you know, because, like, I know, like, with going back to Gandalf and his resurrection, you know, I've had to, like, I didn't have to, but I chose to go down the rabbit hole of Wikipedia and, like, okay, what?
What
and, like, there's this whole other, like, oh, because Gandalf and the other wizards, they're from this other realm, plane of existence. And this is why it's possible for them to do. It's
They're not actually human. You start digging into that, like, Cimmerillion shit, and then you're down. That's a deep rabbit hole.
And it's like, and that's when it, to me, it kind of bumps up against, like, technobabbles. Like, okay, now we're taking the long way around to explain something rather than the perhaps uninteresting way to explain something that's a shorter distance.
Which is magic.
He came back because of magic. You know, like he came back as magic. Or, we stopped the manifolds from collapsing because I glued them.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thanks, Jordy.
There you go.
Race.
There's some gorilla glue. You gotta remember to do that next time.
Let's keep hurling our photon torpedoes. Like, what's a photon torpedo? Photon? It's a particle of light. So they're hurling light.
Or some form of light? I don't know.
I don't know either.
Or are they powered by light? I really don't understand how
those
work.
Wait, photon torpedoes or Star Trek? What did they use to blow up the Death Star?
Proton torpedoes. Because remember, literally everything from Star Wars was stolen.
What I find funny is, like, okay, so it's photon torpedoes in Star Trek, which are particles of light encased in a coffin.
Apparently.
A coffin-sized object.
I honestly can't say for sure that any of that is true.
Certainly a Spock-sized coffin. And a proton torpedo, which is a particle that's even smaller.
Right.
And, like, it's a positive. Like, what? Why don't you just call it a torpedo? Oh, because it has to sound like it's
got to sound like it's from
science,
space.
It's got to sound like spacey.
It's got to sound spacey. And, yeah, and that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the proton torpedoes.
Yeah. And they just fit right in.
Yep.
Zink, zink. Dunk. Yeah, they went in like a basketball. Like, that's what I don't get. It's like, why did they fall in? Like, the momentum's going one way, but somehow it's like, it's going to go in that hole.
Going down.
Like, was it rolling like a bowling ball down the trench?
Or, I mean, he used the targeting machine, so maybe there were smart missiles of some kind. I don't know.
But he turned the targeting machine off.
That's right, he did.
Luke, why did you do that?
I don't know.
Because some old crazy man in my head told me.
Some guy you knew for 15 minutes told you that.
How would you, like, if you said that over the radio? Well, Ben's telling me in my head.
Yeah, no.
To just use the force. Do you think everyone would go like, oh shit. He's got
sound
voices.
Sound the general retreat.
Oh, no.
Sound the general retreat. We have obviously lost this battle.
Luke's gone crazy. Yep. He thinks he's talking to an old man.
Yep.
Oh, God.
Oh, jeez.
Well,
yeah.
All right. Yeah, have any final thoughts? Any favorite uses of technobabble? Worst uses of technobabble?
Ooh, the worst uses of technobabble for me, there was something that was, oh God, most of this last season of both Flash and Arrow are filled with some pretty egregious technobabbly moments.
Right.
Where you're like, wait, what? Like, you might as well have just said magic.
Yeah.
You might as well, like, you really, Caitlin Snow might have just said, we're going to magic up some serum that's going to fix this.
Are you thinking the what do they call it? A time ghost or whatever, where it's like...
Oh, yeah, yep. Remnant.
Time remnant, yes.
The time remnant actually works for me fine. I'm fine with the time remnant.
Well, but that's all based on the idea that somehow, like, changes in the timeline have to take time to show up.
Well, no. I mean, I bought the time remnant as more of a, like, it's really more of a physics thing where he's going so fast.
Yeah.
He's basically lapping himself in time.
Which I get that.
And so that's fine.
But it's when changes in the timeline, because there was an episode of The Flash where they're like, oh, well, that hasn't changed yet.
Right. Yeah. There's that.
It's got to catch up. I mean, it's a little bit like Back to the Future 2 and Back to the Future, where, like, Marty's hand is fading away because his father might not bone his mom.
Exactly.
It's just like, no, wouldn't it either, would, like, what's this fading away?
It's called
dramatic interpretation.
Not to mention the poor Marty of Lone Pine Mall.
Just dead somewhere.
We don't know.
Maybe he's gone on to another universe. A sad universe.
Yeah, that's the thing. Wherever the Marty of Lone Pine Mall went, it was an infinitely worse universe than the one he was in.
Well, good we didn't follow him. Someone needs to write that story.
But the saddest thing is that Doc Brown sent him there.
Doc Brown's an asshole.
Yeah, Doc Brown knew.
Like,
that, you know, like
Doc Brown was going to send his dog in a time machine.
Well, there's that.
Like,
that he hadn't tested. But yeah. Then he also, like, who knows what numbers Doc Brown punched into that, because he now knew how this evening was going to turn out.
Yeah.
So he knew that he had to get rid of the spare. And yeah, that guy shunted off into some other... God, he probably somehow turned out in the time frame that, like, poor Marty left from. And that guy's just wandering around that shitty version of...
I know where he went.
Where'd he go?
Event Horizon. Marty traveled through hell. And
did he pull out his own eyes?
Oh, my God, yes. Yes, he did. God.
Oh, Event Horizon.
Yeah, I watched that once.
I have so many complaints. Actually, I have one thing about Event Horizon. We should wrap it up. One thing, though, about Event Horizon, it would make so much more sense to me if when they got on the ship, Sam Neill was like, huh, this ship doesn't look like the ship that I sent. If the ship had somehow changed, because otherwise that motherfucker built the creepiest ship in history. He built a ship powered by a big ball of spikes.
Well, because Sam Neill...
Obviously, that ship's going to go to hell.
Sam Neill's character was related to H.P. Lovecraft. Yeah, like, it's just genetic.
Obviously.
You know, and Clive Barker. Yeah. Like, come on.
You built a ship to go to hell, and then you're surprised that it went there.
Right.
Come on, guys. Yeah. That's all I wanted. I just wanted him just one moment to be like, it looks like the ship, but things have changed.
I didn't put spikes there.
Yeah.
That would seem not useful.
That would seem not useful and also weird and creepy.
Yeah. All right. All right, on that note.
Yeah, all right.
If you have any questions, and you never do, or at least I certainly haven't checked.
I check. Well, you don't have questions.
All right.
But
Deep
if you have,
Nerd
you
Pod
can,
on
Deep
Twitter.
Nerd Pod. We just want to know that you're listening, because we care.
We know Heidi listens.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you, Heidi.
Thanks again to Heidi for making us sound way better than we should.
Yep. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.